Okay, so David, man after God's own heart. We talked a little about this in the life of Samuel, this particular passage here. Now the Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have selected a king for myself among his sons." But Samuel said, "How can I go? When Saul hears of it, he will kill me." And the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I have come to sacrifice to the Lord.' You shall invite Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one whom I designate to you." So Samuel did what the Lord said, and he came to Bethlehem, and the elders of the city came trembling to meet him and said, "Do you come in peace?" And he said, "In peace. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." He also consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. So Saul has been rejected as king. God is no longer going to support him and his dynasty there as the king over the nation of Israel. And this is over all 12 tribes. It's before the split into the nation of Israel, the nation of Judah. So, but Samuel was to go down to Bethlehem there and to this man Jesse, the Bethlehemite, and he was going to select a king from this man's sons. So he goes down there. It's kind of interesting. The elders of the city came trembling to meet him. So they were concerned that something was wrong. Samuel did not normally come to Bethlehem. If we know that he made an annual route, but that route was north of Bethlehem. He never got down that far south. So Samuel's appearance at Bethlehem was an unusual circumstance. And the elders of the city were concerned. And so they approach him and wanted to know if he came in peace. And he said, "I come in peace." He said, "Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." So he's going to offer a sacrifice to God, just as God has instructed him to do, although that is not his main purpose in being there. When they entered, he looked at Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel, and he said, "The Lord has not chosen this one either." Next Jesse made Shammah pass by, and he said, "The Lord has not chosen this one either." Thus Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. But Samuel said to Jesse, "The Lord has not chosen these." And Samuel said to Jesse, "Are these all the children?" And he said, "There remains yet the youngest. And behold, he is tending the sheep." And Samuel said to Jesse, "Send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here." So we see this. Jesse has eight sons, and seven of them pass before Samuel. But the Lord rejects each one of them in turn as they come up. We see this first one here, that Samuel was clearly looking at the outside. He saw a man here, full maturity, of large stature. We don't know his physical size, but he was apparently an impressive individual physically. And that had been one of the things that had been a characteristic of Saul. Because Saul stood head and shoulders above anybody else in the nation. He was a very tall man himself. And Samuel was looking kind of for the same thing here. But God said, "No, I don't look upon the man's physical appearance, but I look upon his heart, what it is about him that is special. And it's the inside that it's important, and not just the outside appearance." So he sent and brought him in. Oh, there's one other quick thing here. We will not sit down until he comes here. So what were they going to be sitting down for? They're sitting down for a meal. They were going to butcher the heifer and have basically a feast. This was normal in their sacrifices. So, I mean, we tend to think that they take a sacrifice and they put it on the altar and they burn it all up. That was true of certain sacrifices, but not for actually most of them. Most of them, those who were participating in the sacrifice, partook of the meal, and it was a time, should have been a time of great joy that they went through this. So they said, you bring him in. We're not going to sit down and eat until he gets here. So he sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy with beautiful eyes and a handsome appearance. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon David from that day forward. And Samuel arose and went to Ramah. So Samuel gets up and goes back home. So this is the first we see of David. And for the first part of it, then it appears to almost have been a non-event. Samuel comes down, he anoints David. And that should have been something that was very important. You would expect that lives are going to change from this point on. And they did, but at least at first, David went back to tending the sheep. The name David would appear to be connected with the Hebrew word which means to love. David then would mean beloved, presumably of Yahweh. So whether this was David's name at the time he was chosen or became a name later on as he became known, the changing of names of that nature was common in those days. I mean, we tend to put a name on a baby when he is born and or when he or she is born, and that's the name they carry through most of their life anyway, at least that name or portions of it. But then names could change as circumstances changed. David was the youngest of 8 sons of Jesse the Bethlehemite. Their tribe was Judah. The genealogy given in Ruth traces their ancestry to Perez, Judah's son by Tamar. And Ruth herself was David's great-grandmother. She was a Moabitess. David's sisters Zeruah and Abigail are said to be the daughters of Nahash. This permits 3 possibilities. Nahash was another name for Jesse. Nahash was their mother's name and therefore David's mother too. Or Nahash died and his widow then married Jesse and became David's mother. So we really don't know who David's mother was. It's assumed that it is Nahash, but that's not really something that we can prove. So this would be the genealogy there of David that we would see. But he is of the tribe of Judah. And since we know that Jacob, when he was dying, blessed his sons and said, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, then this would seem to be an important that the ruling king is going to now be from the tribe of Judah. And it will remain that way as long as there is a reigning king in Jerusalem. So, and these events here, there seems to be something I can't explain in terms of the timing of these events. This is recorded before the story of David and Goliath. But we're going to see at the time David killed Goliath, Saul didn't recognize him. So David had been in Saul's presence many times, but he did not recognize David at the time of Goliath. So exactly the order of these events, it's difficult for us to say for sure. But it says, now the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord terrorized him. Saul's servants then said to him, behold, now an evil spirit from God is terrorizing you. Let our Lord now command your servants who are before you. Let them seek a man who is a skillful player on the harp, And it shall come about when the evil spirit from God is on you that he shall play the harp with his hand and you will be well. So Saul said to his servants, provide for me now a man who can play well and bring him to me. Then one of the young men said, behold, I have seen a son of Jesse the Bethlehemite, who is a skillful musician, a mighty man of valor, a warrior, one prudent in speech, and a handsome man, and the Lord is with him. So we see this young man describing David at this particular point in time. He can play the harp well. So he is an excellent musician, and we certainly would believe that of David, considering the number of psalms that he wrote, that he had a musical bent to him. A mighty man of valor, a warrior. At this point in time, we do not know of any battles that David has been in. So sometimes this seems to be that somebody is building up somebody without giving them credit for things that perhaps are not yet true. They became true. He says, one prudent in speech and a handsome man, and the Lord is with him. So this much would have been recognized of David by those who came in contact with him. So Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, send me your son David, who is with the flock. Jesse took a donkey, loaded it with bread and a jug of wine and a young goat, and sent them to Saul by David, his son. So we see this. Now, this apparently is after Samuel has anointed him as king. But what did Saul do when he was anointed as king? Where did we find him next?
Plowing the field.
David, where do we find him next? He's out tending the sheep. So there's a similarity there, at least, that these men did not immediately assume great authority and great power. Then David came to Saul and attended him, and Saul loved him greatly, and he became his armor bearer. Saul sent to Jesse, saying, let David now stand before me, for he has found favor in my sight. So it came about, whenever the evil spirit from God came upon Saul, David would take the harp and play it with his hand, and Saul would be refreshed and be well, and the evil spirit would depart from him. So music was calming this beast, whatever it was, that was with Saul. And apparently David was with Saul when he went out to battle, because he's described here as his armor bearer. Or perhaps this was strictly an honorary position and he didn't actually do anything in that capacity at this point in time. Okay. So now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Socoh, which belongs to Judah, and they camped between Socoh and Azekah in Ephes Damim. And don't count on me to have these pronunciations anywhere near correct. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines. The Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, while Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with the valley between them. Then a champion came out from the armies of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor. He weighed that which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. As near as I can figure, that's somewhere around 140, 150 pounds. So he was carrying around a lot of weight. He also had bronze greaves on his legs and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. So he had enough to carry. He didn't have to carry the shield too. So we see this particular event setting up. This is basically where it happened. We're seeing that Gibeah is up here. This would be where Saul's capital would be. This was always where Saul's home was. And so he has come down from here to this region right here, which is southeast of Jerusalem, east of Bethlehem, about 10, 12 miles as the crow flies, probably 25, 30 miles as you have to travel to get there. But the Philistines are camped here on the south of this river here, and the Israelites are camped on the north side of the valley there at this place where the Philistines have gathered. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle array? Am I not the Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will become your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall become our servants and serve us." Again the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." Then Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines. They were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, not only was this man carrying a lot of heavy armor, which you would think would have cramped him in trying to do battle, then perhaps it did. And there's various estimates of how tall he was, depending on what you take for the cubit. He was at least 8 feet tall, and people in that day were typically shorter than they are today, primarily due to diet. So here is a man who is probably at least 2.5-3 feet taller than anybody in Israel. And estimates go as high as 10.5 feet. So he would have been double the height of any Israelite if that's the case. So depending on which cubit you take, you get different heights for this particular individual. So he comes out and he is defying. "You send some one person out to do battle with me." Probably can bring his shield bearer as well. But this was going to be just one-on-one. And whoever wins that fight wins the battle, and that nation will become subservient to the other one. Sometimes might be a good way to settle a lot of wars. But the Philistines didn't really honor that after the battle was over. Now David was the son of the Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And Jesse was old in the days of Saul, advanced in years among men. The 3 older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to the battle. The names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, and the second to him, Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah. David was the youngest. Now, the 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand. So apparently this event where David had gone down to play music for Saul when he was troubled occurred before this event with David and Goliath, but it still leaves some strange questions as to what was actually going on there, because it says David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock. So he was going back and forth between Gibeah and Bethlehem. Mike? I don't think so. I think he went back from attending him at Gibeah. That was just my guess. I can't prove that any more than anything else. But David wasn't at the battle line, at least most of the time. It seems that it was an unusual event when Jesse sent him to go down to where the battle was taking place. So we see that here in verse 17. Then Jesse said to David, his son, "Take now for your brothers an ephah of this roasted grain and these 10 loaves and run to the camp of your brothers. Bring also these 10 cuts of cheese to the commander of their 1,000 and look into the welfare of your brothers and bring back news of them. For Saul and they and all the men of Israel are in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines." Doesn't appear to have been much fighting going on at this particular point in time. It was the standoff with Goliath coming out each day to challenge them. So David arose early in the morning and left the flock with a keeper and took the supplies and went as Jesse had commanded him. And he came to the circle of the camp while the army was going out in battle array, shouting the war cry. Israel and the Philistines drew up in battle array, army against army. David left his baggage in the care of the baggage keeper and ran to the battle line and entered in order to greet his brothers. As he was talking with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath named Goliath, was coming up from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. When all the men of Israel saw the man, they fled from him and were greatly afraid. And the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel." Now, this is what the men of the army are saying. They're telling David. He's going to enrich the man. He's going to give him his daughter as his wife and make his house, his father's house, free in Israel. Now, anybody idea what that would mean? They didn't pay taxes. So when the king levied a tax on the people, these families who were free did not have to pay the tax. Anybody like to be free? So that this was what the men were assuming that Saul would do. This wasn't Saul saying this is what he was going to do, but this was what the men were apparently assuming. And David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, "What will be done for the man who kills the Philistines and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God?" The people answered him according to this word, saying, "Thus it will be done for the man who kills him." So David seems to be surprised that nobody is doing anything about this man out there. It looks like there's great rewards available for whoever can to go out and defeat this Philistine champion. And David doesn't seem to understand it. He's obviously a young man. A young man's reaction to things, we see that here, and can we don't really know his age, but he apparently is still young at this particular point in time. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, "Why have you come down, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle." But David said, "What have I done now? Was it not just a question?" And he turned away from him to another and said the same thing, and the people answered the same thing as before. So it's very possible that Saul had been making promises that this is what he would do for someone who could kill this Philistine. Still didn't make anybody anxious to go up a man who was 9 feet tall. But that's where it stands. And when the words of David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." Then Saul said to David, "You are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant was tending his father's sheep when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb from the flock. I went out after him and attacked him and rescued it from his mouth. And when he rose up against me, I seized him by the beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." So the size of the Philistine doesn't seem to be bothering David at all. He's got his trust placed in God and feels that he can do, that God will support him in doing whatever it is that he needs to do. He goes up against a lion or a bear with a stick and took a lamb away from it and then beat it to death, somehow killed it without any edged weapons. David was not carrying any edged weapons. And at that time, about the best sword that would be found in Israel would have been a bronze sword, if that. So he could have had a bronze knife, but there's no mention of anything like that here. His weapons seem to be the stick and the sling that he had with him. Bill?
Yeah, Yeah.
You see why David is there. He said, and David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, may the Lord be with you." And Saul clothed David with his garments and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with armor. David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. So David said to Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them." And David took them off. He took his stick in his hand and chose for him 5 smooth stones from the brook, put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even his pouch. And his sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. So you see David's total confidence that God is going to be able to do whatever it is that needs to be done, and that David is just the instrument of what is happening there. Sam, and then Bill. That's what he had. He probably had the sling with him, and he might have used that sling against the lion and the bear, although there have been reports, historical records, of people killing a lion or a bear with just a club. And so that may have been what he used. Bill, then we might get the mic.
Wasn't what he was had his confidence in. You know, could have been a sling, could have been a spear, could have been a sword. It was the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion. So he had confidence when he stood up against that lion. That reinforced the Lord is with me, and I'm going to do whatever is best, whatever is going to honor God, which at this time is to fight this Philistine. And so I think in your own life, as you're challenge ahead of you, and most of us we get afraid, right?
Right.
You know, it's fearful, and to just have the same type of faith. I mean, I think the Lord is just as much with us as he is with David. We don't have a lion or a giant literally to battle, but we have. So I think that just shows so much that he's confident that God is with him, and that he's going to help him according to God's.
Yeah, well, most of us lack that level of confidence that David had. But you see why David was considered a man after God's own heart. Mike?
I was reminded of an account recently, and it's been within the last few months, of a man that repelled a mountain lion, I believe it was in Colorado, with only his bare hands. So the greatest weapon that David had was the fierceness of his faith. David had this conviction that if God called him into a circumstance of conflict, that his God was sufficient to withstand. Here's this man that's decked out like an armored truck. I mean, I would hardly go out into the street and try to overtake an armored truck with a pea shooter. But David didn't care about what weapons he had. He had God. And that's what made him a man after God's own heart.
The slingshot was also a very common weapon in those days. We go back into the book of Judges. We see there an account of some of the Benjamites. They said it could throw a stone at a hare and not miss. So it was a very accurate weapon in the hands of one who was skilled at using it, and apparently David was, besides having the Lord on his side. Then the Philistine came on and approached David with the shield bearer in front of him. When the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy, with a handsome appearance. The Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine also said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the sky and to the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, a spear, and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have taunted, this day the Lord will deliver you up into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you. And I will give the dead bodies of the army of the Philistines this day to the birds of the sky and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by sword or by spear. For the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. So this is kind of the confidence that we should all have as we go out and to face the trials that we face in life. If we are going to put our trust in God, we should expect him to be there and do what is right. Not necessarily always what we want him to do, but what he will do be what is what we really need rather than what we really want. And that is something that is oftentimes difficult for us to understand. Why would God do this thing to us at this time? But we need to have the faith of David that he can tell this guy that's probably at least 9 feet tall that I'm going to kill you. And we're going to defeat this army that the Philistines have brought up here. And it's all because there is a God in Israel, and he is the one who is going to do the damage. David sees himself as just a tool, as carrying out what God wanted him to do. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came to, and drew near to David, that David ran quickly from the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag and took from it a stone and slung it, and struck the Philistine on his forehead, and the stone sank into his forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. Thus David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in David's hand. And David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they fled. The men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the slain Philistines lay along the way to Shaaraim, even to Gath and Ekron. The sons of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and plundered their camps. And David took the Philistine's head and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his weapons in his tent. So David goes out there and he apparently killed Goliath with the stone. But then to make sure that everybody knew Goliath was dead, he chops off his head. And that certainly gives everybody that can see that. Most people probably didn't even see the stone in flight, but knew David had slung it undoubtedly. But whether he hit or missed was not clear. Until the Philistine falls over and David runs up, pulls out Goliath's own sword and uses it to chop off Goliath's head. Then it happened. I've got a duplicate slide in here. The battle we see was taking place down here, somewhere along this river valley, this stream valley here. And the armies of the Philistines flee. They go this direction to Ekron or this direction to Gath to get inside a walled city where they could be considered safe from the children of Israel who were pursuing them. But they pursued them and killed many of them as they fled from the battle scene. Now, the promise that Goliath made, that if you beat me, then we'll serve you, apparently was not followed through on. Because we see that the Philistines are raiding Israel throughout the life, the rest of the life of Saul and into the life of David. We see this particular war going on between these two nations. That had been a perennial thing going on with them for many years. Now, when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this young man?" Now, this is the harpist that has been playing for Saul. This is the one that Saul has appointed as his armor bearer, although he doesn't appear to have gone to the battle with him in that capacity. And Saul doesn't know who he is. He has called him to him, has talked to him before he goes out to fight the Philistine. Still doesn't recognize him. And Abner said, "By your life, O king, I do not know." The king said, "You inquire whose son this youth is. So when David returned from killing the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the Philistine's head in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." So this is a part here that always seems to really strange to me, that David had apparently been going back and forth from Bethlehem to Gibeah to play the harp for Saul when he was troubled, and yet Saul doesn't recognize him. Now, whether it's different manner of dress, a different manner of behaving, I'm sure that the head of Goliath doesn't look anything like a harp, which he's used to seeing David carrying. I don't know, this one just, I can't quite figure out just how this worked out. Mike?
The other troubling, or the other quandary that I find in the story that, you know, leads me to think that perhaps these are being told out of order, is that when David speaks up in the midst of this whole battle scene, his oldest brother rebukes him. But if this account is told in the correct order, his oldest brother is rebuking the king of Israel. And he ought to know better than that. And he's you know, calling him a child there. So that there seems to be, I think, perhaps the story's not being told in the correct order.
That's always something that I question, but I can't prove one way or the other.
It seems, yeah.
Yeah. Don? Yeah, it's interesting here, and it's something we can speculate about. We're not going to really know anything about it in this life. This is the first mention of Abner that I can remember coming across. Abner is the commander of Saul's army. He's the general in charge. He's also Saul's uncle. That we would have seen this, or we'll see this later when... After Saul's death, that Abner tries to put somebody else in as king, whereas the people really want David. Now, it came about when he had finished speaking to Saul that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. Saul took him that day and did not let him return to his father's house. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. So David went out wherever Saul sent him and prospered. And Saul set him over the men of war, and it was pleasing in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. So David does not return to tending the flock of sheep after this point in time. At least that appears to be the case. Which kind of says that this previous event where he was going back and forth had to have been before the time of David and Goliath. So it would be in the correct order that way, chronologically. But again, I still don't feel comfortable with that. It's not something that's important. It's not going to have anything to do with our salvation. It's just when we read the story, it becomes difficult sometimes to understand exactly what happened, and we all really want to understand, I'm sure. But we see here, Jonathan says Jonathan loved him as himself. So Jonathan was strongly attached to David at this point in time. This is a passage you may hear quoted today by the homosexual community, claiming that this is a homosexual relationship between Jonathan and David. Nothing in the scriptures that would indicate that. In fact, God to be very pleased with David violating God's law against homosexuality would have been a strong indication that they're trying to grasp at straws. But you may find that you'll hear people making this kind of a claim. Mike?
And the sad thing is that the Holy Spirit found it necessary to communicate this to us so that we understood the affection that they had one for another and the holy bond that they had, so much so that Jonathan even divests himself. He takes off, we read through this, but what we don't think about or may not have come to mind is that Jonathan surrenders the trappings of his position and freely gives them to David, whom he recognizes as being truly worthy of taking the place of his father. And so, here's something that's beautiful that unfortunately has been made, had that tincture of error there.
Yeah, I agree. At this point in time, I don't think Jonathan realizes that David is going to replace him as king. But as their life goes on, Jonathan does realize that and is perfectly willing to accept it. It's his father that will not. Sam?
I see it as like a testimony to David's character, but also the Holy Spirit should really try and tell us Jonathan's character too, the transition that kind of introduces to Jonathan and how his face works and his heart works also.
Amen.
That if you have David, which is man after God's own heart, right? And then you compare him to Jesus. Of course, he wasn't close to Jesus, but the people around Jesus, especially his disciples, they adored him. They wanted to be around him all the time. The kind of person and how he affected people and his character and how they looked up to him and how it just made their day to have an interaction with him. This is Jonathan's seeing this in David. But then again, it reflects back on Jonathan and how open-hearted he is and what he looks for in a good person, right? And yep. How it edifies him and his integrity and character. And so he sees David and becomes best friends because they, in that situation. And he sees something that he wants to be with or belong with, just like someone would want to be next to Jesus.
Okay. It reflects positively on Jonathan, and there's very little in the scripture that would reflect negatively upon Jonathan. Jonathan was apparently faithful to God, and even when he recognized that David was going to be a king and not him, was perfectly willing to accept that. So Jonathan's character is one that wouldn't do us a harm to emulate as well, or recognizing that everything is not going to go the way people think it should, but that it is going to happen. And if that's what God wants, that's what should be. And it happened as they were coming, when David returned from killing the Philistine, that the women came out, all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. The women sang as they played and said, "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him. And he said, "They have ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom?" And Saul looked at David with suspicion from that day on. So the idea that Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s, Well, it wasn't a very prudent thing for people to be singing. It would have obviously made Saul angry, and probably God's hand was in this, that he would do this. So the people are very much taken with this young man, David. And Saul is looking at it with great concern. And of course, we saw Saul when he was first anointed as king. He was a very humble man. And then as he went on, after he came back from destroying the Amalekites, he set up a monument to himself. And so Saul's personality was changing, and he was going from an humble man to a very proud man, and one who expected people to look up to him, and not necessarily just because of his position as king. So Saul liked the adulation of the people, and when he saw David receiving more of that than he was receiving, it very definitely angered Saul very much. So we have seen that personality change that came about there. Now it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house while David was playing the harp in his hand as usual. And a spear was in Saul's hand. Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David escaped from his presence twice. That always kind of surprises me, that David would come back in to play the harp some more after Saul has thrown a spear at him. But apparently he did, because he had to escape twice from the spear of Saul. Now Saul was afraid of David, for the Lord was with him, but he had departed from Saul. Therefore Saul removed him from his presence and appointed him as commander of 1,000. And he went out and came in before the people. David was prospering in all the ways, for the Lord was with him. When Saul saw that he was prospering greatly, he dreaded him. But all Israel and Judah loved David. And he went out and came in before them. So we see David at this point in time has reached a point where Saul is getting more and more determined to kill him. And we're going to see that as we go on through the rest of these slides as we get further into it. Our time is up for this morning. So I'm going to break right here. Is anybody any comments or questions before we do? Don?
I do. Perhaps David was so into Saul being the Lord's anointed.
Right.
So maybe that's why he said, well, if he's the Lord's anointed, it's God's will, whatever happens to me, he tries to kill me, right?
So I can expect that process.
But on the other hand, Saul and David at that time were both the anointed.
That is true as well. Mike?
Yeah, many striking parallels between this period of time in David's life and the life of the Savior, who is our King. Royal jealousy. Jonathan was sort of like a forerunner in a way to David, for whom John was a forerunner for Christ. So there's some things there that kind of suggest and point forward in a way, if we look at it from that perspective.
Okay. So with that, we'll close the class for today. Yeah.